WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Maybe you know what it's like to be in your 20s and drop out of college or drop out of society altogether because you don't want to do what you've been programmed to do, and you get really caught up in your own inner world. Slacker is a movie about that state of mind. It's a super low-budget, oddball comedy that played the festival circuit for a year and did so well it's now opening in movie theaters. My guest is the director, Richard Linklater. He lives near the university in Austin, Texas, where he shot the film. He cast the film with friends, rock musicians, street people, and strangers he approached because they looked right for the part. Linklater got obsessed with movies after he dropped out of college. A couple of years later, he founded a film society in Austin so he could screen the movies that he most wanted to see. Slacker is the 28-year-old director's second film. What is a slacker?
That's always the big question. Well, it's in the dictionary. I mean, by definition, I think it means someone who evades duties or responsibilities. But to me, it means someone who's kind of ultimately being responsible to themselves. You know, and taking time to, you know, discover what it is they really should be doing in their life instead of what they've been programmed to do.
Now, in the opening scene of Slacker, you are the actor, and you're taking a cab from the bus station to a place that I presume is your home. And in the cab, you're going into this long rap about dreams and the relative nature of reality. Let me play a clip from that.
I just had the weirdest dream. Back on the bus there? Do you ever have those dreams that are just completely real? I mean, they're so vivid. It's just like completely real. Man, there was this book I just read on the bus. Well, you know, it was my dream, so I guess I wrote it or something. But, man, it was bizarre. It was like the premise for this whole book was that every thought you have creates its own reality. You know, it's like every choice or decision you make, the thing you choose not to do fractions off and becomes its own reality, you know, and just goes on from there forever. I mean, it's like back there at the bus station, you know, as I got off the bus, the thought crossed my mind, you know, just for a second about not taking a cab at all, but, you know, I may be walking or bumming a ride or something like that. You know, I'm kind of broke right now. I should have done that probably. But just because that thought crossed my mind, there now exists at this very second a whole nother reality where I'm at the bus station, you know, and you're probably giving someone else a ride, you know? I mean, and that reality thinks of itself as this, it thinks of itself as the only reality, you know? I mean, at this very second, I'm in that, I'm back.
Where does this rap come from? Is this one of your raps, or is this a rap that you've heard?
Yeah, no, I just totally wrote it at my word processor.
Is it a rap? Is it a rap you believe in? Is it yours?
It's kind of in the air. There's some, I think, even some physical evidence, certain like new physics stuff kind of suggests that this is a possibility. And then I think along certain, you know, there's been books that kind of hint at this, you know. So I basically believe it on one level.
And on another level?
You know, I mean, it's like most of the raps in the movie. I mean, it can be complete, you know, crap, or, you know, you can believe it. I choose to believe things. Just it's kind of a more interesting way to go through life, you know.
Now, there's really virtually no conversation in this movie. It's all a series of raps and monologues from people who are either incredibly self-absorbed or slightly out of their minds. I wonder where all these monologues, maybe, right? Yeah. I wonder where all these monologues are from. Do people like that kind of gravitate to you? Do you transcribe what they have to say? Mm-hmm. Or is this just stuff that you came up with to give to other characters?
Well, I saw the entire movie as one monologue with like 100 voices or however many people really speak. And in each individual segment, it's kind of like a one-sided monologue with someone listening and then someone doing all the talking and obsessed, you know. Or I saw the movie as kind of an interior monologue, the crazy thoughts that go on in our minds all the time, just as we walk in just these kind of, I don't know, our passing thoughts. And I thought it'd be very interesting to bring that interior, that interior monologue forth in a social way. So it all seems like an attempt at communication, but it's kind of a noble attempt. It was kind of some ideal world that if people really could try to communicate, even though they're obviously not always connecting or conveying their thoughts properly, or whatever their obsessions are, I thought it would be interesting to watch people trying to communicate what's on their mind.
You're making it sound so serious. To me, it's a comedy.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a comedy.
Okay.
I mean, because I think a lot of the raps that are in people's minds are pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me play a rap I especially enjoy. This is one of your conspiracy theory types. This is a guy who thinks that we got anti-gravity technology from the Nazis after World War II. We've already been to Mars, but there's been a big cover-up about it.
You know about the suppressed transmission, of course.
Mm-mm.
No? Ah, well, this is the 20th anniversary of the moonwalk, you know, and way back there when they given us that one giant step for mankind bit. Oh, yeah. Another astronaut's in the background yelling his fool head off, saying, oh, my God, what's that over in the crater? What the hell is that? Well, NASA cuts him off just like that. But those of us with the right kind of radios, you know what I mean? Yeah, we got enough of it. The gist of it was that there's a giant spacecraft over in the other crater. Looking at them. That's right. I was watching this Late Late Show. A lot of truth in the Late Late Show. You know, they slip it through there. They figure nobody's watching. But anyway, it's a sci-fi movie called Alternative 3. And it's about kidnapping people, using a little psychosurgery on them, you know, and turn them into zombies and making them colonize the moon and Mars. Funny, huh? Except it's absolutely true. All of it.
Okay, so where did this monologue come from? Did you sit down and dream this one up, or is this the kind of thing you hear floating around?
Yeah, like every scene, a lot of the information, you know, some I wrote, some I have friends with specialized knowledge, and, you know, some little things I overheard. But kind of like every scene has its own history. On the UFO walk, a lot of that, I thought of that situation. I thought it'd be very funny if someone followed someone out and, you know, accosted them and laid this rap on them based on something he just overheard in a previous conversation. A friend of theirs is they haven't seen lately. So that triggers in his mind the whole missing person thing and how that, you know, connects all these other thoughts. But for a lot of that information, I went to a friend of mine who initially I wanted to play the part. He's up on all the latest conspiracy stuff and, you know, very thorough about it. You know, I'm minor league conspiracy person, but he's definitely major league. So I just met with him. He didn't want to play the part. He refused to be photographed, of course. So I cast someone who I thought looked the part. And actually, the guy who plays that character had come into a video audition. I thought he looked the part immediately. And then, sure enough, in the video audition, he had some sightings. And he told me about some of that. So I thought he was the perfect guy. And but a lot of that information came from, yeah, this friend of mine. I just sat and took notes and then worked it into a script form. And then with the actor, we, you know, rehearsed endlessly, which I'd say that's similar to a lot of the scenes in the movie. I would come up with a script, and then with the actors, we would sit there with pen in hand at a table for hours or however long it took, days, and just work up whatever seemed to be working for that scene. And the actors were always free to, you know, rewrite or throw in ideas. I mean, a lot of the movie hinged on their own, you know, creative, you know, abilities.
Now, when you say that you're up on conspiracy theories, what do we mean by that?
Up on conspiracy? Oh, maybe it's just a state of mind that you see conspiracies out there. You can look at a lot of society as a conspiracy, whether conscious or unconscious. So,
my guest is Richard Linklater, the director of the new independent film Slacker. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Film director Richard Linklater is my guest. How did you start getting interested in the offbeat obsessions that people have and the way they talk about them to other people?
I don't know. I think it's just the world I lived in, just this whole slacker environment where no one either has the means or the energy or just hasn't got it together. I think it's just being in your 20s and out of college that it's hard to really get a lot of things going. So inevitably, you just kind of sit around and talk about it. So I always knew there was a movie there, people just talking obsessively about what's going on, their particular understanding of something or what they would like to do or be doing or not being able to do.
Which is the rap that you consider closest to who you are?
Oh, I think I might have a few people would say the character who sits in his room and doesn't really want to leave the 1 square mile radius that he lives in and is content to kind of not go anywhere or do anything.
I said it's nice outside. We should go do something.
Like what?
Well, you know, there's a lake in this town. We could go out there. We could go out to the hills. We could go to the park and play frisbee.
I hate that. All that nature. And the sunlight's so oppressive now. And you don't just go to the lake. You have to prepare for it. You have to get suntan lotion and insecticide. It's that premeditated fun.
On one level, that could be me, but I wouldn't be sitting there reading the newspaper, watching television. I'd be like reading or working on films or watching a movie or something like that. But, I mean, I lived in Austin for 7 years before I went to a lake that's 3 miles out of town.
Hey, no one can accuse you of not getting around.
That's right.
Do you think of yourself as a slacker? I mean,
Yeah, I think so. Just because by one definition of like not having anything to show for all your labor, which society quickly labels, and that's what slacker really means. It's kind of this social accusation, like you're lazy, you're a slacker, you're not pulling your weight, you know, in this society, which means you're not doing anything that can be, that's a commodity that can be sold or someone can make money off of. I mean, you can't really put a price on ideas or energies that people are spending out, you know, engaged in outside the marketplace. So I spent years, you know, 8 years involved with film. I mean, I knew what I wanted to do rather early on, so I guess I'm lucky in that way. But for all those years, I didn't have anything to show for it. I wasn't employed. I wasn't making money at what I was doing, spending all my time doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's some rough years. You have to kind of put up with the wrath of society thinking you're lazy when I was, in actuality, spending every waking second of almost every day involved in what I wanted to do. So, but it's just only now that I have something to show for it.
Let's talk about you a little bit. You dropped out of college as a sophomore?
Yeah, I went 2 years.
Why'd you leave?
Actually, because I got, this sounds funny, but I got a good summer job. I was working on an oil rig. And really, at that point in my life, school just kind of seemed like a drag. Even though I always did pretty well in school, I don't know, all I really wanted to do at that time was read. So I had a job where I could read about, you know, 12 to 15 hours a day. So I just did that. I kind of didn't want to be involved. I don't know, went through kind of a necessary isolated period. I was out in the Gulf of Mexico working on a rig and just away from everything. I kind of retired from society for about 18 months. But it was through that period that I was just reading. And when I was on land, I started going to movies. So that's really where I discovered movies. My shift focused from like literature and writing and drama to movies.
So when did you feel ready to return to land and return to society?
Never. let's see. I mean, I did that for almost 2 years, and then I moved to Austin. I'd saved up money. I mean, that was that's kind of the great thing about this society. It's not mandatory work. If you can figure out your own thing. I stayed out there. I made a lot of money, and I just saved it up, and I basically didn't have to work for a long time, and I got to spend all my time doing my own thing, which was going to movies, reading, and, you know, working on movies. I, at that point, bought a camera and started, you know, teaching myself filmmaking.
Because you're in your 20s and because your movie is about a certain sensibility, a certain way of seeing the world, you're being seen as the voice of the younger generation, you know, the voice of the generation that came after the baby boom generation, the 20-something generation.
Oh,
yes.
No. Yes.
How do you feel about that?
Well, I'll say I'm one of millions of voices who of a generation that doesn't want to be summed up easily or categorized. So mm-hmm. Any kind of spokesman role feels pretty uncomfortable, just because I know I don't like anyone speaking for my generation, so I doubt they do either.
Have there been things that really bothered you about growing up after the baby boom generation, a generation that really thinks in a lot of ways and invented a lot of things?
Yeah, it's a little tough. I think growing up knowing, oh, you know, they're talking about how radical and cool it all was and how we're a bunch of, you know, complacent do-nothings. Yeah, you grow up with that. The 60s were so cool and hip and everything, and then we're kind of stuck with nothing. I was really conscious of that growing up, and even, you know, in the 70s going, oh, this is a nothing decade. God, I wish I would have grown up in the 60s. And it's that kind of thinking that's why, you know, oldies radio, that I think we'll be listening to those same 400 songs until, you know, we're in our, you know, just forever, because they've kind of got a lock on it, and there's more of them than us.
So in a way, your movie is this like wry comment on the generation that's been called the nothing generation or seen as that.
Yeah, But it's not nothing at all. It's just we've been kind of forced underground by this sort of, baby boomer, yuppie hegemony, basically. You know, everything we're doing doesn't have the same marketplace that the stuff they love, you know. And they're less willing to kind of see what's going on now. You know, it'll never be as good as what they did. So I think that's it's almost a natural, you know, as you get older, I mean, to think that your time was the best, but I don't know, it's nostalgic and unproductive. You gotta move forward.
Richard Linklater's new film Slacker is now showing in New York and Austin. It's scheduled to open in Los Angeles next week and in other cities throughout the summer. This is Fresh Air.